Supported KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Thursday, September 26th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Gunathchi Shawa Tuesuk Nusam Slama, for joining the conversation. Coming up, Theater in the Roughs, Through the Roughing Glass, a fashion show and costume sale, and so much more happening this weekend. It's all to support Housing's First Forget-Me-Not Manor. We chat with St. Vincent de Paul's about this Saturday's Friends of the Poor walk/run, and Shakespeare is coming to town this fall. Henry V starts performances tomorrow night. We chat with a couple of the actors and the director from Theater Alaska. Those conversations and more this hour on Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clenady have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. Saturday night, September 28th, take a ride through the Roughing Glass. It's a fashion show, silent auction, and a just-in-time-for-Halloween costume sale. It's being produced by the venerable Theater in the Rough, and it's all for a good cause, as the proceeds will go to Housing First's Forget Me Not Manor. Go to theaterintherough.org to get more information and tickets. I'm joined in the studio now to talk more about it by Aaron Elmore, co-artistic director of Theater in the Rough, Timothy Sislow, a Theater in the Rough board member and director of this Saturday's extravaganza, and Maria Lovischek-Chuck, representative for Housing First and the Forget Me Not Project. Thank you all so much for coming into the studio. It's a pleasure to talk with you this afternoon. How's it going?
Thank you, Boston.
Glad to be here.
Okay, so we were here a few weeks ago to talk about Rough Reads, that was another fundraiser for the Flood Relief Project.
Correct.
Now, here we are a couple weeks later. We're talking about the fashion extravaganza Through the Roughing Glass. We'll get to the title in just a minute. But I'm curious, let's start with you, Aaron. How did the idea for this fashion show come about?
I think Katie had the idea for both of these events. We started out the year saying we're not going to do any full productions this year because last year was big and we needed a rest. So we're doing these, and Rough Reads went very nicely. I still don't have a balance on how much was raised over those 4 days, but it was much north of $1,000, which is very nice.
Nice.
And now we have this final event for this fall, which is Through the Roughing Glass. And we can credit the name properly and also who the proceeds are going to. It didn't take us long. I don't know, Timothy, check me on this, but it didn't seem like it took us long to decide that we shouldn't just have a fundraiser for ourselves.
Yeah. That was something, you know, that we in last year's productions had pretty successful productions. And so we realized that, you know, maybe it might be kind of nice to give back to the community that has given so much to us.
Right. And Theater in the Rough is how many years? 40?
33 years young. Yes.
You have a young adult. You have a grown adult.
That's right. That's a grown adult. This is almost ready to move out, but probably not.
We'll never leave. All right. So why a fashion show, Timothy?
That was actually decided before I was part of the board. I was asked to be a board member at the beginning of August. And when they were having their initial meeting with me, they had brought up the idea of, doing this fashion show and whatnot. And I previously have worked in theater, a lot of drag and whatnot. And so fashion is a very big part of all of that. And so when they mentioned it and asked if I wanted to direct, I was so excited. And working with Theater in the Rough in the last year has been really fun. And so it was something that, I saw that we could take a standard fashion show and turn it into something else.
Nice. That's kind of cool. Now, this is a one night only event. It's Saturday night.
Correct.
At 7:30.
With a follow up costume sale time, just costume sale time, on Sunday from 2 to 5. We have a costume grabaganza. If you don't want to come to the evening show or don't want to buy a ticket, you can just come look at the costumes that are there on Sunday while we're striking the set.
Did you call it a grabaganza?
Grabaganza. Katie came up with that.
I like that as well. That's kind of fun.
And Valerie Lindegaard came up with Through the Roughing Glass. After we banged our head on what we should call it for weeks, she just said it. It was great.
Yeah, it's really great. And obviously, people might think of it as a reference to Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass. And that also kind of suggests, kind of some elements of fantasy or maybe some unconventional storytelling. Mm-hmm. How are you incorporating that? What is this going to be, Timothy, in terms of you're directing this and it's a fashion show, but it's from a theater company. So I'm imagining there's some kind of something cool going on. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, definitely. So we decided pretty early on that we were going to have a storyline and we were going to almost make it more like a play and a production. And so Aaron and Donnie Gott, who is also a board member, they kind of worked together, put their heads together and put together a story of our stranger character, but played by Aaron, wakes up and he doesn't know where he is. And suddenly a giant looking glass appears, and through that looking glass comes our mistress of costumes, played by Donnie. And he gets led on a wild journey where he finds friends in unexpected places and togetherness. And it's all blended with live music. We have some drag in the show. We have some juggling, and we even have a unicyclist. So we created a storyline that, transcends just a standard fashion show and kind of really gives you a good through line.
I love that. It sounds like it's got a little bit of everything, which is kind of fun. And it is a theatrical event. How long will it be?
We are actually having our first full run through tonight. We're anticipating it will probably run about 2.5 hours with a 20-minute intermission.
Wow, that's some storytelling right there. I love that.
The 20-minute intermission is so that you can bid in the silent auction, if I may.
Oh, absolutely.
Segue,
yeah,
gently
of course.
Here. The first act is all the clothes, most of the clothes that you will see in the first act are available for auction. So we're going to have those on photographs around the room, and you'll be able to bid on them beforehand, and then you'll see them in action. You'll think, oh, I really want that. So then you go back to your bid sheet. So there's a chance for some folks to own some Theater in the Rough original art, some original costumes, some things that are just from stock that have been kicking around for a long time. And yes, we have a lot of gear. And the main point of this, I think, started out like, how can we get a little more room in these racks here?
Empty the garage,
just
as it were.
A little bit.
Yeah.
It's lightening our load a little bit, but the gear is beautiful. And it's just things that we thought people would like and that we had a hard time thinking, well, we're not going to use this every month for the next couple of years. Let's move this along.
I see. And of course, as we mentioned, Theater in the Rough's been around 33 years. And for those that don't know, Aaron, much of the time you build the sets and or the costumes, along with being in the shows and or directing the shows, along with your wife, Katie. And so I'm assuming you have accumulated many wares over the years that people might go, oh, yeah, I saw that show. I want that piece. And now they can bid on it.
For instance, if you saw the fairies in our production of Midsummer Night's Dream a couple of years ago, you might want to come bid on one of the fairies. We have dragon heads, which will be auctioned off as well. and many, many clothes. So it's just something for everyone, I think.
I love that. Okay. So now there's also mention of puppets and sword fights and stuff. Is that all happening?
Timothy said it's a theater on the off show. We got to do a sword fight.
Right. Absolutely. So we can expect a Theater in the Rough production. If you're in the community and you've gone to one, you know what to expect. And if you're new to the community, it's a great time to check out the theater company. They, as Aaron mentioned, they're taking a break from full productions this year. They usually do one in the spring and one in the fall or one in the summer. It depends on how you do it, but mm-hmm. a couple of shows a year. If you've just moved to Juneau, it's a great theater company in town here to check out. And now let's talk to the, how did you decide to partner with the Housing First to give the proceeds of this to the Forget-Me-Not Manor?
Definitely. So kind of at around the time that we were starting the planning phases for the fashion show and whatnot was around the time, sadly, of the death of Steve Kissack. And so we definitely wanted to kind of focus our efforts and focus our giving towards something related with homelessness. And Valerie had brought up the idea of Juneau, Juneau Community, Juneau Housing First, Forget-Me-Not Manor. And we loved the idea. One of their board members is also a longtime ruffian. And so we figured that would be a really great way to, you know, still basically to fundraise towards, you know, the issue of homelessness and also involve, you know, people that are already part of the Theater in the Rough community.
I love that. Okay, so Maria, let's talk with you a little bit. Maria Levashek, you retired this summer.
I didn't
after
retire. I
well
just
you shifted your you yes. shifted your role after 15 years of leading Juneau Housing First, and you have done so much for this community, and that you did sort of in June-ish, I guess. So what is your role now? You're still involved in some way?
So I am working on our housing project. So we just finished 247 South Franklin Street, which is downtown, our old shelter, which has 7 apartments and Jellyfish Donuts on the bottom. And then we are working on phase 3 of Forget Me Not Manor, which will add 28 more units to our existing 64. And then we're also partnering with Gastineau Human Services on creating some recovery housing, which will bring 51 units of housing for folks in recovery to their existing campus. So I am sticking around to work on our housing project, another housing project. And then also, we never really actually did like any actual like fundraising and donor development. And so I think the idea is that I would help with that. And it was also unreasonable for one person to like manage all of the grants and run the shelter. And
yeah, I was going to say, so you basically, you ditched all of the busy work and you're doing the quality work of working on the housing projects themselves. I mean, I'm joking, but I know what you're saying. So you don't have to deal as the executive director with everything. You're able to sort of focus in on the thing that you're very passionate about.
And we have like a very amazing like new executive director, Caio Quinto, who is, you know, just much nicer and just much better. And so I think it will be, yeah, it's like, it's a very good transition. So I can just kind of be working on fundraising and housing.
That's fantastic. And I do want to mention for those, so you mentioned a little bit about the number of units and everything and that the Glory Hall moved, which I know you were instrumental in making that happen. And now you've converted that into more apartments. So for those who may not know, tell us a little bit about Forget-Me-Not Manor.
So Forget-Me-Not Manor is 64 right now. It will be 64 plus 28 units of permanent supportive housing. And so it's for individuals who are experiencing chronic homelessness and they are referred by the community partners, the hospital, police department, other shelters. And we have a voucher available on every unit. And so when people move in, they don't have to have any income. Like lack of income is not a barrier at all. And the building is staffed 24/7, so there are supports on site. And it's really following the Housing First concept, which is that you offer somebody a home, and if they accept it, they accept the home, and then there's no judgment or conditions on being in the home. So folks can suffer through substance abuse issues and then still have a home, but there are supportive services available on site. And our partners on that are Jemmy Health and Wellness and Search. who provide behavioral health services, case management, and primary health services there. And it really works. Like, it's an amazing model, but there's just, like, not enough units. But
yeah, and I love the fact that you mentioned, yeah, they're going to have a total of 92 units when you get done, which is really, which is pretty great. You got the $2 million in funding to support that construction, which is fantastic. And you talked about how it really works. And what I was fascinated by was that you can actually, on the Housing First website, you can find the PDF of the report. And if you want to dive into that, you can. But what I found fascinating by that, and there was actually even a study done even after the first 6 months, but then I know there was an additional time spent to find this out, but just stuff, there are fewer emergency room visits, fewer police encounters, improved physical and mental health. And there's all kinds of numbers with that in terms of the decrease of more than 50%, sometimes more in those particular areas by helping house folks long-term. Right? Because there's a difference. Can you tell us just a little bit about the difference between the idea of temporary housing versus something like forget-me-not manor?
It's just, it's like, there's no comparison, really, you know, and like, and I think I can speak about this because, you know, I've run an emergency shelter and it's the same folks, and you walk into our emergency shelter and it's, you know, chaotic. Like, it's chaotic. It's problematic. There are all sorts of things happening. And then you walk into our Housing First facility, forget-me-not manor, and it's the same folks, but folks have a home. And so there's like dignity with that, and there's safety in that. And it's permanent supportive housing. So you never have to think about like, what am I going to do next? If you want to do something next, like you definitely can, but there's not that like external pressure, or I can only be here for 90 days. Ooh, I got to like, you know, figure out where my next home is going to be. Like, you are home. So I think that's like the biggest difference. Yeah. And also people are protected by a lease. So you can't willy-nilly tell somebody to just, you know,
move on, get out.
Protected by the Landlord Tenant Act.
So if somebody is suffering and is unhoused or has somebody they know, what do they do? Where do they go?
So unfortunately, because there are not enough units, there's this like very regimented process, and it's called coordinated entry. And so people who are experiencing homelessness get entered into this system, and it's called Homeless Management Information System. And the system ranks you based on the amount of time you've been homeless and then your emergency service visits. And so as soon as there's an opening in forget-me-not manner, which doesn't happen as often as, you know, it should, but it's because people are staying there longer, we send an email out to the coordinated entry committee, which is consists of all of the providers in Juneau, and they say, we have an opening. And then the committee meets and, you know, the system pulls up a list and then the person is recommended.
I see. Okay.
And it's really, it's not the best process, and it's not fast enough. And like, we definitely need more housing units because there are definitely more people than units.
Well, I mean, really housing in Juneau is an issue overall. Obviously housing for those who don't have a home is also an issue. So this seems like a great opportunity for Theater in the Rough to give a little bit of money from their performance and from their sale on Sunday to Housing First. What's the website for Housing First for folks out there?
www.feedjuno.org. No, housejuno.org. Sorry. www.housejuno.org.
Housejuno.org. And yes. theaterintherough.org is where you can find tickets for the Through the Roughing Glass, which is coming to you this Saturday night. It's a fantastical journey through costumes and gear and all kinds of fun things. And as we said, it's a fundraiser for Housing First Forget-Me-Not Manor. Timothy, Aaron, Maria, thank you so much for coming in and telling us all about it. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Buzz.
Thank you.
Good cheese. And now a Southeast story spotlight. Over 150 years have passed since the U.S. Navy bombed Cake, a Tlingit village in Southeast. Navy leaders visited this past weekend to formally apologize for the attack, which killed several people and left many more to starve and die of exposure after the village was destroyed. Here's KFSK's Shelby Herbert.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light.
Visiting Navy serviceman Jeremy Sauer opened the ceremony by singing the Star Spangled Banner. About a dozen elders walked or were wheeled to the front of the crowd to salute the American flag, Hlinget button vests and blankets were draped over their shoulders, and on their heads, veterans' caps, denoting the military branch and foreign wars they served in, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq.
And the rockets red glare, the bombs bursting in
air. Joel Jackson is the president of Cake's tribe, called the Organized Village of Cake. He said he couldn't help but point out the tragic irony of the attendance of the tribe's military veterans.
Our veterans have been in every major conflict. Even though they took our land, our men still went and fought for their country. And I'm very proud of them for their service. And we got some in the room here.
On Jackson's right, Old Glory hung for all to see. And behind the flag, there was a totem pole carved by a local artist. Half of the pole is blackened by fire to represent the centuries of colonial violence endured by the Tlingit people.
I've been thinking about this so long. I talked to a lawyer, and he said the military will never apologize or offer restitution for what they have done. So I'm glad it's happening in my lifetime, because there are so many lives that have passed, or generations that have passed, without receiving this.
The conflict started in Sitka over a century and a half ago and led to a series of deadly attacks between the Cake Tlingit people and American soldiers who were stationed in the area, culminating in the bombing, which left the people of Cake without food or shelter in the dead of winter. Oral history records many deaths, especially among elders and children. In its apology, the Navy called the attack wrongful military activity, but Jackson calls it an act of genocide.
And basically, it's still in our DNA today. We got a lot of the things that are facing our people, or that were done to our people, basically acts of genocide. I'm being real with you, because it wasn't just a bombardment, it was supporting schools and all the pandemics that we had back then, trying to erase our people from this land.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski was also present at the ceremony. She spoke as a representative of the federal government and as an adopted member of the Tlingit Deshetan clan. She said the Navy's apology is a historic moment and one that she hopes will promote healing.
My mother reminded me it is never, never too late to say I'm sorry. But the effort is one that should not die, that could not die, that must be remedied.
Finally, Rear Admiral Mark Sicato stepped up to the podium. He said the Navy acknowledges the pain, suffering, and loss of human life brought about by the bombing.
The Tlingit people of Cake did not deserve the bombardment and subsequent destruction of their villages by U.S. naval forces, and expresses its regret for the long delay by the United States Navy in issuing a formal apology. We are invested in supporting Cake community's healing and view this as the beginning of a dialogue towards making amends.
Joel Jackson didn't outright accept the apology. Instead, he turned to the Klan leaders present at the gathering.
You all heard the apology. What do you think? You don't have to answer, but being the tribal president, I believe we should acknowledge apology.
Cake's clan leaders ultimately elected to accept the apology, but the Navy's work isn't over. They're currently speaking with Wrangell and Angoon's tribes to issue a similar apology to clans that suffered in this series of attacks. Those ceremonies will take place later in the fall. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Up next, St. Vincent de Paul's on this weekend's Friends of the Poor Walk / Run.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk are ye tin. Jin Katka K Jin Tauk, Anakaya Haani Kuk, Gunnish Cheesh.
Hey. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. St. Vincent de Paul's is celebrating 40 years of service in Juno, and this Saturday, they are hosting their 14th annual Walk to End Poverty. It's all part of a national event called Friends of the Poor Walk. It's to help raise awareness and funds for the work that St. Vincent de Paul's does. All the details and more information on everything they do is available at svdpjuno.org. And here now, Dave Ringel to share with us more. Gunnith Chi, Shat Yigudu, thank you so much for coming in. It's a pleasure to talk to you again, Dave. Wasa Iti, how's it going?
And Yubik, I'd say, with Lewis Sikdua.
There you go.
Because I'm hoping I did that right. I'd spent about 40 years as I came to Alaska, first out of the Yukon, Kuskokwim Delta in St. Mary's. But it's sort of a privilege and an honor to represent St. Vincent de Paul. And, we're starting our walk. This one's going to be a little different for me. I used to join the run and then lead the walk. And I pretended I was 36 instead of 63. So as a result, the surgeon has me on a scooter. I'll walk with people. But this is an opportunity to raise funds for St. Vincent de Paul, but also to raise awareness. We'll start both events at our thrift store, which everybody knows at the corner of Shell Simmons and Glacier Highway. The run will start at 9 a.m. We'll head out to the wetlands. It's a 3K flat run. Last year, a lot of families and people with strollers did it because it's a nice, flat, kid-friendly run. And so the run will start at 9 o'clock. After the run, we'll post the results and we'll gather for the walk. The walk will start at 10, and it'll be a mile walk from the thrift store to our Teal Street campus at 8617 Teal Street. It's across the street from the Glory Hall, but it's a place where a lot of good services happen. I sometimes say a lot of good magic happens, but people don't realize our thrift store generates a lot of support, and added to our donations, we are able to prevent a lot of people from getting into worse situations than they are. 25% of our money comes from government direct funding, but between the thrift store and charging some rent to people, but at a rate they can afford, 30% of their income. And donations, we have 101 housing units, 57 of them are on Teal Street, and we'll give tours of those. We also have three other units in town, one of which was evacuated in a landslide in July, Strasbaugh Apartments. We're arguing with the insurance people. We sort of agree, like Maria and Housing First, that the solution to homelessness is housing. And for a lot of people, they get into a tough strait. They might miss a month or two of rent. And if we can stop the spiral at a month or two of rent and get them back into housing, we eliminate a downward spiral that results in people losing the skills for housing and ending up on the streets. And so there's a talk that, when people end up on the streets, sometimes the average length of homelessness is 7 years. But if you can get them in the first month or two, get them back into housing, you're eliminating a whole lot of expense that otherwise would happen. And these funds raise awareness of how we do that. It's not just at Teal Street where we have a walk-in navigation center where anybody experiencing problems can come and talk to a community navigator. It's through our emergency family shelter and vulnerable adult shelter where people who wouldn't be safe in a normal shelter can find a room, pay real little, $500 of rent a month for up to 2 years and get stabilized so they can get back into regular rental options.
That's great. I mean, I think a lot of people might think of St. Vincent de Paul's just because of the thrift store and being able to drop things off, but to be able to get details on all the different things that you're providing to the community and the people that you're helping, and that all these proceeds are going to be going to feed, clothe, and house your local neighbors, basically, which is really, really valuable for the community.
A lot of the workers, and some of them will join us on the walk, they started off in our shelter needing a job, and they worked, and some of them worked into management positions. Others have left to work for other agencies. But they're able to go from being homeless to being productive. We you know, one of the families that was at Strasbourg actually ended up in my spare bedrooms when the building was evacuated, because putting two young kids in a hotel is a recipe for difficulties. And I looked at them and I knew a little bit of their history, which had been one of them had been a problem in my neighborhood, and she fits in perfectly in the neighborhood as a working young mother.
Mm.
And you think about that, that's the real progress that helps solve some of the problems. And we're grateful to be a part of that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I know, you know, I just wanted to clarify too, because there, you know, I was saying in the intro that this is a run / walk, but really it's both. It's a run
you
and
could
then
run
a walk.
And then walk. And
yeah,
at the
both.
Shelter, we offer hot dogs and snacks. There's going to be kid face painting and some opportunities for the kids to play. And it you might not even realize it, but you might be walking next to one of our shelter residents.
Right.
And we don't separate them. We sort of, you can get to know these people and realize, you know, we're looking at people who have their struggles in life, but they're working their way through them.
Yeah,
and with
great.
The help of people. And yeah. So, you know, everybody who takes a tour of our shelter goes, I never knew how much goes on in these two buildings, because it's two buildings with 57 housing units, the sobering center. We have a clothing distribution center, a navigation center. We try and provide the skills so that people who are on the struggling end don't get stuck in homelessness.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so important. And you mentioned the landslide and the from the flooding and all that kind of stuff. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the process is, just so people understand what happened to the building and what you need to have happen in the future for it? I know you said you're struggling with the insurance.
Well, what happened is, I think it was July 14th. We had that heavy rain, the 10 inches of rain. And I got a call on a Sunday morning and there was a mudslide. And basically I went up and a river was flowing next to our building, pushing trees into the electric panel, which at first looked like, okay, there was no structural damage, but you cut the electricity off at a building and you have a mess.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, we filed the insurance claim and they're arguing about whether it's, we had flood insurance, but we're working with our insurance adjuster, and you know, we were required to have insurance for this by our mortgage lender, but you work with people. So we tried to do the right thing, and we're going to work with the seven families that were in our seven households. You know, of the seven households, six of them would be considered to have made less than 30% of the average income in Juneau. Mm. So you're looking at some of the people who, if we didn't have low-income housing opportunities like St. Vincent de Paul, wouldn't have the opportunity to be housed.
Mm.
So we're working on that. We don't have an answer yet, which is, you know, no news means they're thinking hard about whether they're going to consider our case or not. And I just have to, with like a lot of things, it's a faith-based organization. And some of the faith is we will get the money to continue to serve people the way they are. And some of that is holding fundraisers, and some of that is come and see what we do and see how valuable it is.
Right, absolutely. And also, lastly, I just wanted to mention that you have a new traditional Thlinkit legend on the side of the store that maybe people have noticed.
Well, yeah, because of the culvert closing Glacier Highway, people might not have come that way. But on the side of our thrift store is the story of Gunna Kadate, which is a Thlinkit legend that originally was at Pocket Park, where Deccan Dave is now. And when it was removed from Pocket Park, it was sitting in storage. And our board member, Ricardo Worrell, worked with CBJ and with Larry Gamas of our board and Thlinkit Haida Regional Housing and Alaska Commercial Contractors. And we put this story up on the side of the thrift store. And we're going to do a dedication of it between the run and the walk.
Oh,
and
cool.
It's a great story because it's a man who was considered sort of lazy by his mother-in-law. And he was walking along the shore and he found a monster, the monster was dead. He put the skin on and he started to provide for the village. And so when he got the monster skin on and returned to the village, it was in famine and he started bringing fish, and his mother-in-law took credit for it, but he kept giving it until one day, you know, he was found dead, and the village then realized it wasn't the mother-in-law who was providing everything. It was the spirit of Gunna Kadate and the man. And it's an interesting legend because it talks about generosity and not taking too much credit for it, but accepting the generosity as it comes. And I think as a director of a large social service agency, I'm grateful for the community out support, the community support, the outflowing of generosity that we get every Thanksgiving and every Christmas when we provide food baskets for people at Thanksgiving and we do adopt a family for Christmas. There's a lot of generosity that goes there. And it's St. Vincent de Paul is the conduit through which it happens, but it's really because of the generosity and support of our community and the efforts of my staff and my board and a lot of wonderful people who work together to make our community better. And that spirit of generosity is part of that legend.
I love it. That's great. Well, it's the 14th annual Walk to End Poverty. It's this Saturday, September 28th, and you can find out more and register at svdpjuno.org. Dave, thank you so much for coming in to tell us all about this weekend's events and everything going on at St. Vincent de Paul's, and we'll see you down the line here, I'm sure.
I look forward to coming back in as it's coming into our busy season.
Absolutely. Thanks all for coming in, Dave. Gonna
talk to you later. Gonna teach.
Up next, Shakespeare's Henry V from Theater Alaska is happening around town this fall. We'll talk with cast members and the directors next. But first, a star party. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kostas with the Recheck Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the fall equinox. September 22nd is the official start of autumn in the Northern Hemisphere. It's called the equinox. There's a spring equinox in March. So what's going on with the equinox? Well, it's when the sun is shining the same on both the northern and southern hemispheres. On the day of the equinox, whether it's in September or March, at local noon on the equator, the sun is directly overhead, which means there is no shadow. And the whole reason for the seasons on our planet Earth is the tilt of the Earth's axis, 23.5 degrees. If there was no tilt, we would have no seasons. If the tilt was greater, the seasonal variation would be greater. Another property of the equinox is it's the only time when the sun rises due east and sets due west. Other times of the year, it sets north or south of east and west. The equinox is also the time of the greatest daytime change. At the solstices in December and June, it's the minimal amount of daylight change. And also, it's the time when day and night are approximately the same length. So we can now see that the days will be getting shorter until the December solstice, and then the days will get long again. This is Steve Kostas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. Our public shows are on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Theater Alaska is presenting Henry V with performances beginning tomorrow and running through October 20th. For the full schedule, visit theateralaska.org. Henry V seems a timely pick to mirror some of the burning questions of the day about leadership, what makes a great leader, what does a leader have to do in tough situations, and does that make it okay? To discuss a bit of this, I've got two actors from the production, local favorites, Enrique Bravo, who plays Henry, plus Natalia Spangler, who plays a variety of roles, we'll say. And guest director James Palmer, a director based in New York City, but one who travels and has worked with many of the largest regional theater companies, most recently directing an acclaimed production of A View from the Bridge at Long Wharf Theater in Connecticut. Gunath Chi Sha Ye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you all here. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
Thank you.
You're in the middle of it, right? Like tomorrow night first. So let's get this out of the way. This weekend, the performances start, but it's sort of the previews, as it were.
Yes, I would say so, I think.
We're calling them previews.
Yeah, we're really excited to have an audience in a couple new spaces and show the play to people for the first time.
Yeah, so this weekend, just clarify for us, where is it going to be this weekend?
Yes, on Friday night at 7:30, we'll be at the Juno Makerspace on North Douglas Highway.
That's a fantastic space.
Yes, and a new space for us too. And then on Saturday at 7:30, we will be at UAS in the Egan Library.
Oh, okay. So just two shows this week. And then next week, where do we see the show mostly?
Most of our shows will be at McPheeters Hall on 4th and Gold downtown. We have one other community performance at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library. That's on Thursday, October 17th at 7:30 p.m. But otherwise, our run, which is October 3rd through 20th, will be at McPheeters Hall.
And it's basically a little different than what Theater Alaska has done in the past, usually going all over in different spaces almost every other day, it seems like. And then this time also, there are tickets being sold. A lot of times in the past, you showed up and it was, you know, drop some dollars in the bucket. But this time you can buy a ticket in advance if you want to. It is still pay what you can. So there's no high ticket price. It's accessible for all, basically. But part of that, I think, is moving inside, renting McPheeters Hall, doing all the things that needs to happen there. So that's kind of cool. So, James, welcome to Juno. Is this your first time in Juno?
It is, yeah.
That's cool.
Oh, my God. It's beautiful.
Closer to the mic.
Oh, yeah. Hi. Yeah. No, it's beautiful. I feel like a broken record every time I walk out in the morning. I go, my God, it's stunning.
Yeah.
Every time I turn a corner or go on a hike, I'm like, my God, it's stunning. The views, the people, the art culture here, it's incredible.
That's fantastic.
Juno fan.
Well, welcome. Thank you. Is it your first time to Alaska?
First time to Alaska.
Wow. Yeah. That's so great.
Yeah.
So, so why produce Henry V today?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Floor actually approached me about it, and it had been on a short list for me. A short list is like the plays that a director really wants to do before they die.
Yeah.
And I knew this one was way up there on my short list. But Floor was so right that the timing of it couldn't be more perfect. I think when a lot of people think of this play, they get excited because, you know, these iconic speeches, these big moments. It's about this ragtag group of English soldiers led by this fiercely intelligent king who are taking on the impossible odds and fighting the French. But in order to do that, they have to sort of come together and unify. And it really is a ragtag group. And I think one of the things that attracted me to this play is that it's about coming together. It's about how we only make great accomplishments and find success when we come together as a team. And over again, Shakespeare keeps repeating that theme through this play. And I think, you know, there's a lot of trauma in the world right now that we're all dealing with. And I think this play offers a way for us to look at diversity as an opportunity to be strong together.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, like you mentioned, the sort of the patriotism or sort of nationalism as a theme sort of running through the play as well, and kind of that coming together and being part of that. So Enrique, let me ask you, playing the titular role, as they say, what kind of challenge is this for you to be playing Henry?
I mean, there's been a lot. The main one I will say is the truncated, you know, rehearsal process, because it's been a lot that we've had to sort of do in the couple of weeks we've had, but it's such a big role. And I mean, there's so much, language within this piece that people are so familiar with, you know, it's kind of like doing Romeo and Juliet. People are they know word for word.
They know that St. Crispin speech,
they know,
right?
That St. Crispin speech. In fact, it was funny. I was talking with Natalia, and she said that when Michigan won the national championship, the coach there actually to sort of bond with the coach with the teammates, he read the speech to them. It's wow. Just like, yeah, it's that kind of a play. So everybody comes to it, you know, kind of expecting a specific thing. But it really has been great to have somebody like James, because he has such a wide knowledge when it comes to plays like this. And it, I mean, it's kind of challenged me to think of things that I wouldn't have thought of normally.
And you have truncated the play.
We have.
You have a truncated rehearsal, but yeah. You also have this, it's like a 90-minute no intermission kind of deal.
We were cutting scenes last night, boss.
And we're cut.
Yeah, so it is, we're trying to shoot for, I think originally we said an hour and a half, but it's probably falling around 140 now, but after last night, who knows?
Who's to say,
yeah.
Right? We'll see.
But it you know, it's kind of crazy though, even as, you know, truncated as that is, it's all there. It's you know, you get the whole arc.
Well, he's a little verbose that way, right?
I know.
Yeah, right?
It's true.
Says things again and again. James, so I mentioned that you did this production at the Long Wharf of Arthur Miller's View from the Bridge, and that was done in, like, the Canal Dock Boathouse.
Yeah.
So you had to transform the waterfront space into something. And so I'm imagining that sort of experience is helpful in this situation where you're kind of taking this play into different spaces. Can you tell us about how you approach a play when you know it's going to be done in this way?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was, I've known Flordolino for a while, and he's been talking about Theater Alaska for some time, and I've been excited by the ethos of the company. And again, this feels like the perfect play for this group. In the beginning of the play, the Shakespeare writes a chorus that comes out and invites the audience to imagine.
For a muse.
Yes. Natalia, are you taking notes?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Austin. I'll take that note.
Are you doing that?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes.
He does it phenomenally.
I bet she does.
Iconically.
I'm doing it like Derek Jacobi from the movie. That's what I remember is the match lit and then, that's kind of a fun one. But anyway.
So I knew that we were going to be touring it, and I knew that we were going to be doing it in the round. And it just felt so right to say Shakespeare, you know, he wrote this play in 1599 when he was writing Hamlet, when he was writing Julius Caesar, when he was writing As You Like It. He wrote it to open his new theater. And he invited the audience in, and the first thing he said is, "Will you imagine with me?" And I thought, what a great way to start our show. Let's start it here and now with just some people on stage, actors, poets who are carrying a story, who have a message they want to share. We have seven actors. And right away, the chorus says, "Into a million parts, divide one man." And we do.
And we do.
And I find it really thrilling because it really shows what I love about theater, the muscularity of it, the magic of it. It really highlights what talented actors we have on stage. Which again, when Henry is talking about we few, we happy few, we band of brothers, I always think of a crew of theater people who have to do the impossible. We're there until midnight, you know, not sleeping, just fixated on putting this play up. And I hear Henry's lines and, you know, it motivates me. So
that's pretty great. So Natalia, let's talk to you a little bit about, so you're playing the chorus.
Well, I will say the chorus is made
up
of the different actors. Yes.
Yeah.
So I have the first speech, but pretty much everyone else has a bit of the chorus as well.
I see. Okay. And what other roles are you playing in this swath of experience here?
What a good question, Austin. I am also playing Pistol. I'm playing Catherine, the Princess of France. I'm playing the Governor Harfleur. And I am playing an English soldier as well. English soldier number 5.
English soldier number 5. That sounds like me in grad school. But Natalia, so now you have been in, I believe, most of the Theater Alaska productions.
Yeah.
Save the one that they did last fall, Doll's House Part 2.
Correct.
So how is this experience different from the other ones?
I would say this rehearsal process, maybe this is my imagination, but it feels shorter than the other ones. No. We've kind of been, you know, down and dirty for the last 2.5 weeks, which considering we have an audience tomorrow is quite quick.
That's usually frightening for an actor.
No, I'm not frightened at all. As I sit next to my director, I'm not frightened at all. No, it's been wonderful. It's been really amazing having James here to direct, having someone new come in. I mean, we've all worked, most of this cast has worked together in various productions, be it with Theater Alaska or in other productions before. And it's always wonderful to work with a company that you have connections with already. But to have a director come in as well who brings fresh ideas and have designers who come in who have not worked with us before. I want to give a shout out to our amazing design team who have built a really visually oddly gorgeous play. It's been really wonderful to work with old and new company members.
That's fantastic. Can you tell me who else is in the play?
Yes. Well, aside from myself and Enrique, we have Connor Chaney, Brian Crowder, Florlino Lagandino, Caitlin O'Mealy, and Becky Orford, rounding out the very ensemble cast.
Yeah, it's a very well-known group of actors in town. Being able to put on this play, which it sounds like. So how do you approach, because many of the shows you've been in with Theater Alaska have been Shakespeare. How do you approach is there something you do specifically in terms of how you approach the language?
I couldn't say that there's a thing I always do. I mean, I've been lucky enough pretty much all of the Shakespeare's I've done with Theater Alaska, I've done before with other companies. And so for the most part, I try and approach it with fresh eyes and not think, I mean, in this play, I'm playing a role that I played 9 years ago. And I try not to return to that. I try and really stay open to what the actors I'm working with in this moment are giving me and not fall back on anything that, I mean, at this point, I don't really remember what I did with this part 9 years ago. And I was a very different person 9 years ago. I think the challenge with any Shakespeare, and especially with the Shakespeare that you've done already, is to keep it fresh and to stay present with the production that you're doing at the moment and to always listen to your fellow actors on stage and just respond and be a person on stage.
It's fantastic. And Enrique, so what are some of the challenges for you in terms of this particular role? Is there anything about this role that is sort of driving you this time around?
I mean, a lot of the language has been, it's a lot of language to learn in 2.5 weeks, especially, you know, you get to act five and you think, oh, here, I'm done. And then there's a giant, you know, sort of wooing scene that happens. So that's been part of it. I mean, it's just a really physical show. I mean, you feel it afterwards. It's so episodic and everybody's sort of, the one thing that I don't have to deal with, thank God, is it's costume changes, but the rest of the cast is switching into so many characters. So that's where I got a little breathing room, but I think just the time and the language, and because I mean, the thing that I get scared with sometimes with such a short process is that, you know, just generality, just something being generic, and you know, like you got the lines and you're up in front of people, and then, you know, that should be good enough, and that's not the kind of theater I want to be doing. So I really sort of put luckily I have my days off right now, so I've been able to put a lot of work in for myself during the day. And I think I feel like I'm in a good spot, but yeah.
That's good. So there's got to, and the role, you know, sort of this leadership role, you know, how have you been tackling sort of that journey, or what has that shown you about, what are you learning from Henry for yourself?
Well, I mean, I think there is a lot of stuff that James mentioned before. I mean, really, you know, he was a man of the people. He really, I mean, there's that scene where he wants to kind of know what is going on within his troops. And he sort of disguises himself just to see what the heartbeat of you know, his soldiers are feeling, and takes that to account. I mean, he doesn't, he isn't a sort of a dictator in a sense where it's all about him. He really wants to kind of bring these people. I mean, the fact that he is able to motivate this, you know, small group of ragtag English soldiers to take on the French, which were pretty, you know, the numbers were in the French's camp. So, yeah, some of the how he used language and himself as an example to sort of be that leader.
Yeah, so that sort of that moment to moment kind of humanism for mm-hmm. himself, right, in terms of finding that and being a leader, which is kind of cool. So, James, a lot of people, this is just to clarify for folks out there in the world, people go, why is it Henry V and not Henry V? Why do we say it that way? Does anybody know?
No, I've honestly never thought about that.
It's very clear. And when you look into it, it's like Henry V. Yeah. You don't say Henry V. And I don't know if that's just for a Shakespeare thing or not. I just wondered if that had come up at all.
I'm embarrassed to say this. Usually I've checked because most of the times when
we get— How many grad degrees do we have?
When we get the titles, like King John is just a title, but the actual title is like the tragical reign of King John. And I suspect, I could pull out my Arden right now if you want. I suspect
it— I don't know if we have time for that.
I suspect it is probably something different. But come on, Henry V just sounds like—
It sounds better.
So powerful, right?
Yeah.
Five is a good solid number. Four is a little wishy-washy, right?
That's true.
I'm suspect about four.
That's so good. I always used to say number two, why try harder? Right. So, Natalia, break it down for us one more time before we have to go. Dates, times, all that stuff. Where do we get tickets?
Absolutely. Well, all these dates and times and the link to get tickets can all be found at theateralaska.org. That's theater with an E-R, alaska.org. And as James said, all the tickets are pay as you can. So hopefully that reduces any barriers there are to people being able to come out. We have a performance tomorrow night, Friday, September 27th at 7:30 p.m. at the Juno Makerspace on North Douglas Highway. We have a performance this Saturday night at 7:30 at the UAS Egan Library. And then after that, we have performances Thursday through Sunday at McFeeters Hall at 4th and Gold downtown at 7:30 on weeknights and Saturday nights and 3 p.m. on Sundays. And we have one last community performance at Mendenhall Valley Public Library on Thursday, October 17th at 7:30 p.m.
Fantastic. Gonna cheese for coming in today, y'all. Really appreciate it. Break
Thank
a leg.
Thank you so much, Boston. See you, Boston. Bye.
And that will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, a sneak peek at the Southeast Elders Care Summit happening next week. Plus, Search is sponsoring Movetober, a free physical activity campaign to get you moving this fall. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunath Jeej.